Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Going on the news. In fact, it appears that as of this moment, breaking news, there is a deal between the United States and other countries and Iran to limit their nuclear weapons capability. I don't know the details of the deal because it literally just came out. President Obama is speaking about it right now as I speak at 3:06 p.m. Eastern Time on July 14th. So, I will focus on the deal tomorrow when I've had a chance to review it and go through it in detail. I hesitate to make any comments until I've read it. That's just the way I am. Sometimes I like to know what I'm talking about before I talk about it. So in the meantime, I want to extend further our discussion from yesterday about Jeb Bush, who basically told American workers, we need to work harder, we need to work longer hours. Calling us lazy, folks. And what it is about Republicans that make them believe that people without money are, by definition, lazy. Because are there lazy poor people? Yes, they exist. Are there lazy rich people? Yes, they exist. Are there hardworking rich people? Sure. And you know what, Jeb Bush? There are hardworking poor people, too. People who work two and three jobs and can't still make a living. It doesn't mean they're not productive, Jeb. They are productive. In fact, American productivity keeps going through the roof year after year after year. What's not going through the roof are American wages. The problem with the American workforce, Jeb, is not that we're lazy, but that we aren't paid enough. And that failure to pay American workers as much as we used to, I mean, going back to 50s, 60s, 70s, American productivity, when it went up, wages went up. But that's not the case anymore. Now Americans work harder and harder and harder and get paid less and less and less. And you can only push us so far, Jeb, until we fight back. I find a similar analogy, not quite the same, and we'll talk about the differences between them, but between what Jeb Bush wants from American workers, he wants us to work harder for less money, and what Germany is doing to Greece right now. Actually, American workers come out the heroes of this story because they didn't take out a bunch of debt they couldn't afford, like Greece did. But even so, there's only so much you can push a country around as well. Here's the problem. If Greece owes a lot of money, then torturing and mistreating Greece and making sure that the country suffers and the economy gets worse with its already 25% unemployment is unlikely to get enough work going to get the money being paid back. Let's look at it totally from the point of view of the creditors. Forget the fact that I actually care about people and want them to succeed, liberal that I am. Let's look at it from the point of view of a mafia loan shark. Let's say you are a mafia loan shark and you've loaned, I don't know, $100,000 to someone at extremely high interest rates. And the guy is not paying back your loans. What are you going to do? You're going to scare him. You might threaten to break his legs. You might put a horse's head in his bed if you've been watching too many movies. You definitely want to frighten, scare, encourage in any way, shape, or form the guy to pay back your debt at the enormous interest rate at which you charged. That makes sense. That's what creditors do. But if you go too far, if you kill the guy, you're never going to get your debt repaid. And even if you only break his legs, he's unlikely to work hard enough, not because he doesn't want to, but because he'll be unable because he, well, he won't have any legs working. It'll be a lot harder for him, disabled, to do whatever he needs to do to pay you back your money. This is what Germany needs to learn about Greece. Yes, you want to push a debtor to pay. I get it. I get it. You borrowed the money you want him to pay. Although, to be fair, the people who lent the money to Greece this time should have known better. Greece has been an economic basket case for at least 5 years now. And the reason they charged very high interest rates is because people expected Greece to default. I wouldn't be surprised if the latest loans were 30, 40% interest because they expected default. It's kind of like those credit card companies that lend at 23% to people who they know can't pay it back, steal as much as they can, and then when the person declares bankruptcy, blame them for not paying it all back. But you see, Germany profited big time from its loans to Greece. And it's not just Germany. Obviously, it's the European Union, although Germany is the strongest actor in the European Union. But the stronger economies in that European Union, the Netherlands, and France, and the stronger economies do well by tying their currency to very weak economies like Greece. And it's not just Greece. It's Spain, Portugal, to some extent even Italy. Ireland used to be a fairly weak economy. Greece is the worst of the worst, but it's not only Greece. The point is that by tying their currency to a weak economy, it made German products cheaper. You see, the way currency works is when you have an economy that's moving on very strongly, the value of the currency goes up. When you have an economy that's quite weak, the value of the currency goes down. In fact, the United States dollar is going through the roof. Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Obama. That means that our economy, as compared to the rest of the world, is much stronger. Way to go, President Obama, making our economy all strong and everything. Now, it's not perfect. It's largely just better than the rest of the world, but that's still pretty good, given that we came out of a worldwide recession. And yes, as an economist, obviously there are things other than a strong economy that help make currency stronger. When you do things like increase the money supply, that makes currency weaker. I get it. I know there are other things. They're doing quantitative easing in Europe. We're ending it in the United States. We're going to increase the interest rate soon. I know all that. But stick with my basic analogy here. You can only push people so far. That's the heart of what I'm trying to say today. You can only push people so far. Until it becomes counterproductive. Think about an employer mistreating his workers. You could even, if you really want to get gross, you can think about a master and a slave. If you mistreat your workers so much that they die, you're not going to get a lot of good work out of them. If you mistreat your workers so much that they're barely alive, and they're croaking under the burden of the employer's work. If you mistreat them so much, well, they can't give you productive work. There comes a point where mistreatment actually leads to less productivity, less effectiveness. That's what I want Jeb Bush to understand. That we're already working harder than we ever have before. That Americans are already working on average 46 and a half hours a week. On average. And since 40% put in 40 hours, the other 60% of us are working very hard. Far harder, far longer, with far fewer vacation days, far fewer paid sick days than they do in Europe. Working us very hard. And at some point, telling us to work harder just doesn't work anymore. At some point, you actually got to pay us a little bit more. So the fact that the minimum wage is every single year decreasing... Yeah, I know it's staying constant, $7.25 an hour, but given that inflation goes up every year, the real wage, the real value of the minimum wage, the real value of all our wages is decreasing. In fact, 80% of Americans are poorer than they were a decade ago. 10% maybe stay even. Only the richest 10%, and really the richest 1%, have made out like bandits in the new economy. And the same is true with Greece. You see, if you starve an economy, and you don't allow it to have a separate currency, you basically run it into the ground. Greece's unemployment rate is 25%. I strongly believe that Greece, if I were Greek, should not have accepted the European plan. I think what they should have done is just defaulted. Said, screw you, creditors. We're not paying you a dime. We're issuing our own currency. We don't need your friggin' euro. It's going to be called the Greek drachma. We're going to devalue it sharply. That'll make our goods more competitive. And that will lead to a revival of our economy. We don't need the euro. The euro only helps you, Germany, with this uneven economy. Why should you profit off our weakness? If we're going to be weak, then let's just be weak. We'll have our currency weak. Its buying power will be less. But at least we'll be able to afford, the world will be able to afford our products. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to stick it all in one pot. But to me, the global lesson is this. You could only push people so far. Even if your goal is to get the maximum out of someone, you could only push them so far. And the heart of the difference between liberals and conservatives, seems to me, is conservatives believe in punishing American workers, in pushing them even harder, in making them compete with dollar-a-day laborers in Vietnam or Mexico, making them compete with the lowest of the low, the poorest of the poor. Texas, great example, trying to out-Mexico Mexico. We can mistreat our workers worse, Texans say. We can pay them less. We can torture them more. We can cause them to have great health hazards. We can make it cheaper. We can pollute our rivers more. Business is great in Texas because you can pollute the rivers. You can mistreat workers. We can make it almost as good as Mexico. Whereas liberals say we can make our economy as good as Norway or Sweden or actually Germany. In other words, we can train our workers, pay our workers enough, treat them well enough, give them good health benefits, vacation benefits, paid sick days, maternity leave, paternity leave. We can treat our workers good enough that they have more money, that they spend more as consumers, and with the multiplier effect, which basically means the more money you spend, the more money that circulates in the economy, the whole economy grows. Democrats are the build American workers up school of economy. And Republicans are the beat American workers down economy. You could almost compare it to, well, the South and the North before the Civil War. The slave economy of the South, that went pretty well. That's one way. Mistreat workers enough. Force them to do things for you. Make them miserable until you squeeze every last bit of sweat out of them. Or build up an economy where you treat workers well, so much so that they're happy, so they spend more, so there's better market for your products. Or as Henry Ford once said, I have to pay my workers enough so they can buy my cars. Two models. The first is the third world model, the slavery model, the mistreatment model, the model of undeveloped countries all over the world, the model of feudalism. It works. But the other model, the one of civilized developed nations, the one that have universal health care, certainly leads to a happier population. And I would argue, at the end of the day, first world economies do better than third world economies. Because believe it or not, when you treat workers well, they achieve pretty well. What do you think? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Give me a call. Give me your 2 cents. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the best way to make an economy grow. Is it by treating workers as well as you can? By providing paid family leave? By providing good health benefits? By making sure that people get maternity and paternity leave? Making sure people get child care? Is that the best way to get your workforce there? Or mistreat the workers? Make sure that they get paid little more than they do in Vietnam or Bangladesh. Make working conditions so hard, make it so awful that they have to work more hours just to stay alive. I would argue the first is a more liberal vision and the second a more conservative one. I think my caller disagrees with me, though. We'll find out. Jim from Massachusetts on line five. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Going on.
Hey there.
I totally agree with you. I just kind of always heard a different side of the conservative view in that they were less trying to keep people down and more worried about deficit spending and having such a large government budget. And I was wondering what sort of policies you think would tame those fears.
Well, first of all, I think that is a complete lie when conservatives tell you that. And here's my proof that it's a lie. Okay, or at least when Republicans tell you that. I guess conservatives, to the extent that they're not Republican, may be more consistent. But here's how you know it's different. If you look at the Republican Party under President Obama, they're constantly arguing about too much deficit. Fair enough. Before that was Republican George W. Bush. Note how the Republican Party felt then. They felt we needed massive, massive deficit spending. We had good surpluses under Bill Clinton. We had to get rid of those surpluses, have massive deficits, massive tax cuts. There's nothing more that Republicans liked than deficits under Republican George W. Bush. Let's go back to Bill Clinton before him. Well, Bill Clinton ran surpluses, and Republicans, you remember, complained about Clinton deficits as being too large. What about under Reagan and George Bush Sr.? Under those Republican leaders, Republicans love deficits. Ronald Reagan massively increased the national debt, as did George Bush Sr. Under Jimmy Carter, a Democrat, they complained about deficits. Under Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, they spent like drunken sailors. I can go forward back. The Republican position on deficits is very simple. When a Democrat is in charge, they want to starve the government, complain about deficits, pretend it's important to them because they don't want Democratic priorities like health care and Social Security and things like that. When Republicans are in charge, Republicans consistently support massive, massive deficits. And that's why, and I suggest you look this up, you will find that under Republican presidents, deficits are always much higher than under Democratic presidents. So this idea that conservatives are actually concerned about deficits, I find to be a complete farce. I can go back 50 years, and the only thing that's consistent about Republicans and deficits is that they support them when the Republicans are in charge, and they're against them when the Democrats are in charge.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Take a look at that. I will answer your question one way, though. And in terms of my own personal concern about deficits, I look at it as an economist does. In other words, there's a time to spend and a time to save. And I would fully agree that in times of full employment, when the economy is strong, when inflation is low, when unemployment is low, that's the time when you need to cut back on deficits and even run a surplus, exactly the way Bill Clinton did. And in fact, I would argue that Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s actually made a mistake, because our economy was good in the 60s, our inflation was low, our unemployment was low, and he ran deficits anyway, and that led to the massive inflation of the 70s. So there is a time when deficits are bad, and that's when the economy is good, deficits are bad. But conversely, when the economy is bad, we need deficits to get us out. That's what Franklin Roosevelt did. If you want to stick on with me, Jim, I'd be happy to have you stick around. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Be right back after this.
And thanks a lot.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So if you want workers to work more in America, if you want our economy to grow, if you want your horse to go faster, do you use a carrot or a stick? It's a fair question. You're on a horse. A horse isn't going fast enough. You can kick at the horse really hard. You can beat the horse with a whip. It'll probably go faster. Or you could feed that horse better. You could provide a greater meal for that horse, a bunch of carrots, as a reward for the fast horse. And it'll probably go faster as well. The carrot or the stick. Which is better for our economy? Now, a liberal will point out that it's morally better to treat people better than it is to treat them worse. A liberal has empathy. I like to argue that's the main difference between myself and my evil doppelganger, Mark Levin. Doppelganger. Is that a word that people often use in radio? Probably not. My evil twin, Mark Levin, L-E-V-I-N, doesn't have that second E in his last name. That E stands for empathy, and that's what I find all too often conservatives lack, the ability to put yourself in someone else's position. Which is the best way? Well, again, a liberal looks at it with her heart. She says, well, hey, these people are suffering. They're miserable. They can barely make ends meet. They can't take care of their children. They're spending all this money on their health care and their rent. They're working three jobs. There's only so much they can do. They want to get their kids an education. They want to achieve the American dream. I feel for them. I feel for those Mexicans that come across our border, whether they're documented or not. They're just trying to live the American dream like my great-grandparents did. They just want to work very hard and achieve the American way. I feel for them. I imagine what it's like to be in their shoes. Life is tough for them. I am my brother's keeper. Let's give everyone a helping hand. That's a liberal sensibility. If you think like that, you're probably a liberal. A conservative thinks about it, what's best for me? Those workers coming across the border, what have they done for me lately? They're trying to help their own families? Why aren't they trying to help me? Why aren't they doing more for me? Those workers in my factory, they need to work harder for less pay. Get to work. There's the stick. There's the whip. Hurry up. Conservatives supported slavery. Conservatives supported a hierarchy of kings and nobles and dukes and earls of landed nobility, where if you were lucky enough to be born the child of a king, you're the king, or a duke or a noble or an earl, and you didn't ever have to work at all. That was where you were. It was called knowing your place. The peasant knew his place, and the earl knew his place. And largely it was the American Revolution where we said, hey, no, all men are created equal. Now, we meant all free white men with property, but hey, it's a start. All men are created equal. Radical notion, a liberal notion. An idea that people who work hard and play by the rules should succeed, and not just because they're part of the landed nobility. Okay, and then it got expanded. Hey, not just white men, white Christian men with property, but white Christian men without property. Andrew Jackson, for all the evil he did to Native Americans, set the principle. You didn't even have to own property to vote. Wow. Wow, what a liberal idea. Those white men without property didn't know their place, but they got to participate. And then they didn't have to be Christian anymore. First Amendment. Wow, even non-Christians, even Jews, even atheists, even Muslims would have a right to participate based on their hard work. Pretty cool. And then, well, Civil War didn't end at all. The idea of allowing black men to have equality at least started in the 1860s, didn't really finish till the 1960s, isn't really finished today. But in that direction, that's a liberal direction. The idea that women were equal citizens, that they could own property themselves. Used to be 100 years ago, a married woman couldn't own property. All her property went to the husband. The idea that she was an independent human being who could think and feel and work for herself. That's a liberal notion. It's a pretty wild notion. And then the idea that you didn't have to be German and, well, you didn't have to be English. We'd all start with English. You could even be Irish or German or later on Italian. You could be Chinese or later on you could be African American. And today you can be Latino and come across the border and still contribute to an American society. What a liberal idea. The idea that you don't have to know your place. The idea that everyone should get a hand up rather than a stick. I would argue it's the carrots of America that have made us so strong. It is the inducements. It's the reason why we have more people wanting to immigrate here than every other country on earth combined. It's the American dream. It's the idea that we are all Americans, whatever background we come from. That even now, gay and lesbian people can get married. Another liberal idea to really make us e pluribus unum, from many one. And yes, that includes even poor people. Even poor people are people. Even American workers are workers. They have a right to bargain in unions just the way that the employers do. These are liberal ideas. The conservative idea would be, I guess, know your place and get as much as you can out of those that are working for you. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's go to Mike in Tennessee, line 5. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Look, I want to expound on why you think that middle-class Republicans vote against their own interests, and why do workers who identify themselves, middle-class workers who identify themselves as Republicans, what reason do you think they vote against their own interests?
That's a great question, Mike. That's one of the best questions that anyone could ask. I really appreciate that question. It's a good one. It's a troubling one. We all understand why a very rich person on Wall Street who pollutes the environment and doesn't want to be subject to regulations because it makes them make only $100 million instead of $200 million and doesn't want to pay high taxes. We understand why those people are Republican. We get it. And we understand why minorities, why African-Americans, why Latinos, why feminists, why gay and lesbian people. We understand why they're Democrats. We understand why union people tend to be Democrats. But why would, and let's be more specific, Mike, we're talking about working class white people, because working class black people tend to be Democrats. Why would working class white people, people who are struggling to get by, why would they ever vote Republican? And the answer is actually it's a complex question, and I'm gonna try. It's gonna take me some time to answer it, but I'm gonna do my best. Part of it is history. It used to be that white working class people were the perfect Democrats. I talked about Andrew Jackson, all right, and Andrew Jackson was he had slaves and he was brutal toward Native Americans, the Trail of Tears. I don't mean in any way to praise Andrew Jackson's racism. I want to be very clear on that. But Andrew Jackson did extend the voting franchise from white men with property to white men without property. In terms of the working class white guy, Andrew Jackson was his president. Andrew Jackson was someone who said, if you're poor, that's why people talk about the Jefferson Jackson Democratic Party. This idea that the ordinary working man should have a say in government. Jefferson believed in that too, is in many ways the foundations of the Democratic Party. And so then if you look at like William Jennings Bryan in the late 1890s, the Progressive Party, he represented farmers. He represented, again, white working class people. And he lost to the Republicans. But if you look at who voted for him, it was the South. It was the Midwest. It's all those areas we consider rock red today. All right. And then came Franklin Roosevelt. He largely united the entire country, both the northern working class and the southern working class, because Herbert Hoover had done such a lousy job. And everyone was pretty much a Democrat under Franklin Roosevelt. Okay. Then comes the Civil Rights era. And in the Civil Rights era, I think after Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act 1965, there was a significant amount of white working class backlash. It was personified by George Wallace, who was the third party candidate who ran against both Nixon and Humphrey in 1968 and got, I don't know, 14% of the votes. Not a huge amount, but a very large amount for a third party candidate. And Wallace understood that there was resentment among poor whites because as poor and downtrodden and mistreated as they were, and they were less poor and downtrodden and mistreated as poor blacks were. And I think there's something about someone who's miserable that at least can say, aha, well, at least I'm less miserable than that other person. That's not a great human trait, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at, for example, the Ku Klux Klan, there was a time 100 years ago, Pulaski, Tennessee, the Ku Klux Klan, the white men behind the robes tended to be the richest and the judges and the highest, you know, plantation owners of society. They wore the white robes to cover their faces because they were the leading white class of the 1890s. I think if you look behind the robes of the Ku Klux Klan today, you'll find extremely poor and white men, and I guess a few women, mostly men. You'll find people who are uneducated, people who are ignorant, people who've had really hard lives, people who live in trailers, maybe people who come from abusive families, and their lives are so terrible. It's weird because I'm actually telling you in some sense I feel sorry for the Klan, but I do because not for what they do, but the point is the people who join these hateful, racist, dangerous organizations, or even, you know, look at terrorists today, or you look at even that awful, person in the South Carolina church. These are people who are loners. They're mistreated. They've been abused, and they want to abuse someone. Instead of looking at their abuse and saying, I'm going to make the world a better place so that people aren't abused anymore, many abusers are the subject of abuse themselves. And instead of taking that abuse and turning it around and making the world a better place, they want to hit someone else. You know, I can't tell you how many examples I know where there's three sons and big brother picks on, beats up, tortures middle brother. And what does middle brother do? He can't fight back against big brother. Big brother's too big, too powerful. He tortures his little brother. And he feels better about the torture he receives from big brother because he's busy torturing little brother. Now, poor little brother, he gets the brunt of it all. But I think you'll find that a lot of children of abusive families unfortunately grow up to be abusers themselves. And it's pathetic because you do feel sorry for them. And yet, of course, you cannot in any way sanction or feel sorry for their abuse. You have to break the cycle. And what I think what Democrats have to show to white working class people is that rather than spend all their energy mistreating blacks or others or immigrants, Mexicans, or gay people, or others they try to see as inferior to them, that if we raise everybody up, give everyone a decent wage, give everyone decent health care, give everyone a decent place to live, then there won't be this divide and conquer where you have poor people hating each other when really they should go out and join together in a union. And after all, that's what a union is for. It means united. And fight for all of their working class wages. And it's tough because when people are hurt, when people are down and out, they lash out. They're angry. And they often, unfortunately, lash out against the wrong people. You know, the powerful people are too powerful. There's not much they can do against Donald Trump. There really isn't. He's a very rich man. He has a lot of power. But they can attack that Mexican laborer who's struggling and working 12 hours a day for, you know, and for, well, why is he working here for less money than I'm working for, that jerk, you know, send him back to Mexico, as if the poor Mexican laborer is the problem when he's just trying to provide for his family too, you know, rather than pick on someone who's weaker than you. It's, you got to convince people who are mistreated to pick on people stronger. And that to me should be the goal of the Democratic Party. So it's a long answer, but that makes sense to you, Mike? You still there, Mike?
Let me say something. Let me say something. But what about the propaganda machine? Every time an election comes around, it seems like there's a big propaganda machine, you know, that sways middle-class voters, white middle-class voters, into thinking that those people are your problem.
Well, of course there is.
You know what I mean?
Of course there is. That's exactly what the people in charge want. They don't want you looking at them, you know, pulling all the strings and making stuff miserable for workers. If they can get poor whites and poor blacks to fight each other, then they make it off like bandits. So the Koch brothers and others pay hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it is to teach you. They use their money to teach people to vote against their interests. I absolutely think that's part of it. Mike, stay on with me if you want. I got to take another break. I also want to encourage others to call in and join in. If you want to join in the discussion, you can at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Just talking about the difference between, well, conservative and liberal ways of doing things. They both want more workers to work. They both want greater economic progress. The question is, how do you get it? Carrot or stick? And I think if Democrats talked about it more that way, then it might just ring a light on in workers' minds, in people's minds, in average Americans' minds. Mike from Tennessee says, well, now why would a poor working person vote for Republicans? And we all know who he's talking about. He's talking about a poor white working person because, working people that are black or Latino tend to vote for the Democrats. And I think the answer is it's propaganda. It's the Koch brothers. But it's also a wish to be better than someone else. It's cultural. We often get our political beliefs from our parents. And I think that's why you'll find that Republicans are careful to allude to Mexicans or blacks as being lazy rather than poor people as being lazy. There's a reason why Trump went after Mexicans. There's a reason why Republicans wink, wink, nod, nod, and then blame things on black people. Really, they want to blame things on poor people. They want to say, you don't need sick leave. You don't need unions. You don't need maternity leave, paternity leave. You don't need health care. Because if you were a harder worker, you'd have it all. Jeb Bush. You know, why don't you just work harder? Mitt Romney, why don't you just borrow from your parents? Jeb Bush, why don't you just get your dad to be president and then work from there? They don't have the understanding of the real hardness of everyday life. So they have to divide and conquer. It's got to be about blacks and Mexicans. It's got to be about people who aren't like you. Those weird people, those gay people, those transgender people, those people from different cultures, those people who don't speak English perfectly, those people who don't believe in God or believe in a God differently from the way you believe in. It's look the other way. It's squirrel. Attention deficit. Hey, something else is going on here. Look everywhere. But the fact that America has some of the least protections for workers for anyone in the industrialized world. Yeah, the Affordable Care Act is a good thing, but that's only because it's better than what came before. It's not as good as universal care. Why are we in Papua New Guinea the only countries on earth that don't have paid maternity leave? We need paid paternity leave as well. Why is Scott Walker, a guy most celebrated for destroying collective bargaining in Wisconsin, why is he a front runner for the Republican presidency? Why should mistreating American workers be something that is considered highly praised in the Republican Party? It all goes down to this belief that if you're poor, you deserve it. And it's something that I think that working class people need to fight against. Heck, that's part of the reason why I'm a liberal. If you want to comment on today's show, please do so. My website is marklevinetalk.com. You can follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk, MarkLevineTalk. Let me know what you thought of the show. Tomorrow, we're going to go over the Iranian deal in detail and tell you the details about it. It's Mark Levine. Talk to you next week. Tomorrow, I mean.